Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Enquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of sarcasm and musical interludes you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Burst up the middle of the field. Look out. Reedy's off to the races.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I am Paul Daner Jr. We have a very, very special edition of Scribe Session, I must say, because we are coming to you live from the Toyota Sienna Studios. That's right. Myself, Joe Reedy, of course, a fellow Cincinnati Choir Bengals beat writer for Cox Media and Dayton Daily News, Jay Morrison, and Fox Sports Ohio's own Kevin Goheen, who has been on our podcast before. He's no stranger to the game, but Jay's first appearance, and it is Jay's Toyota Sienna. So first off, we got to thank Jay for driving as we're heading on our way back from Pittsburgh to Cincinnati. You're a good man, Jay.
I love to drive. All the family vacations, I do it. I drive the whole way. The wife, the kids sleep, so it's not a big deal at all. I'd almost rather be driving than be in the passenger seat.
Well, I have this vision of, like, you know, National Lampoon's, like, well, Christmas Vacation. We're all gonna have to start singing Christmas carols at some point on the way out here.
There ain't gonna be no Christmas carols.
Not with Joe Reedy will we have any Christmas carols. But, I mean, this is Scribe Session, Joe, so there's got to be music. You know, we've got to do something. And I think for Jay, as I watch you just make our way down, what road are we on? What are we on, 70?
I-70,
70 West. We're bearing down on Columbus, Ohio. I feel like a little bit of the Doors is in order. Let's open with the Doors.
When you said this was a very special Scribe Session, hopefully it's not like a very special episode of Blossom or something like that.
Whoa! Yeah, no, I don't, I hope not. Yeah. I don't know, sometimes Blossom shows up on Scribe Session. We can't predict these things. So, while we're here and we all cover the Bengals, we should maybe talk about the team. So,
we get into it within 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Well, we have to get in under 10 minutes or else people complain. We've got to make sure we get right into Bengals talk. So, Steelers 30, Bengals 20. Not the strongest of showings on prime time for the local men. I guess the first question, Joe, I'll start with you. What the hell happened?
Primetime game where it doesn't go well. Sunday night football, which really doesn't go well. And you're going to have bad games during the season. We thought week 4 in Cleveland was bad. Week 9 in Miami wasn't good. And this one, they just laid a... they laid a giant egg in an opportunity where they could have made a statement and showed that these weren't the same old Bengals. People are now saying they're the same old Bengals.
I mean, is it that simple? Do you buy that, Gogo?
I don't know if it's necessarily that simple, but I was really surprised with the defense. After the poor second half that they showed against Indianapolis, I didn't see a lot of improvement. You can look down Pittsburgh's numbers, and there was nothing gaudy about Pittsburgh's numbers, except one thing that stood out to me is that the Bengals just never got them off the field. They didn't face a lot of third downs, but they didn't face a lot of third downs. I mean, they had 5 third downs through the first 3 quarters. Any chance the Bengals have had for getting a comeback going was lost in the fact that the defense didn't hold up its end of the bargain, which it has done immensely all year long. And I think it's the one thing that really stood out to me.
I guess on a day when you have the dropped punt by Kevin Huber, that is essentially a 7-point gift, and the punt return by Antonio Brown, that's basically a 7-point gift. It's one of those where you look the defense, all in all, though, considering the situation they were put in, held their own a little bit. I know Joe didn't give them an A, nor would you think about doing that, but they weren't awful. They made some plays, particularly mostly in the second half. The offense, no turnovers. Dalton sort of took what was given to him because a lot was given to him when they went down 21-0. Sort of that first quarter and the special teams blunders. I don't know, Jay. It seemed like they kind of stole any chance at executing a normal game plan and threw the Bengals into scramble mode. It's hard to recover from that.
It is. You've seen them do that earlier this year, fall behind at Miami and fight back, fall behind at Baltimore and fight back. They forced overtime in both those games. They jumped on Green Bay early and then fell behind by double digits and came back and won that game. But it was almost too much, too soon, too fast last night, or Sunday night. It was just too much to overcome. They needed to do it in a hurry to get back into a rhythm, and there just never seemed to be any urgency in the offense. They were taking their time. They were hitting plays, taking what the Steelers were giving them, but they were huddling up, taking too much time between plays. And a lot of the players said after the game they felt like they got things turned around. They just ran out of time, but they've got no one to blame for running out of time but themselves.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. I mean, the drive, it was 13 plays, 60-plus yards. You get a touchdown out of it. It was the fourth down completion to Eifert. But you're down 30-7 midway through the third quarter and huddling up, leisurely walking to the line. Every play is going down to under 15 seconds on the play clock, it seems. You're just throwing seconds away when you're down by 3 scores. In fact, I believe
we have a dramatization.
We have a bit of a dramatization. It's just what you were hearing as the Bengals leisurely made their way down the field on that touchdown drive. It was shocking, and the whole drive, everyone was saying the same thing. Why are they taking so much time doing this? It was almost like they sort of cashed in the game and said, you know what, we're not going to come back and win anyway. Let's just have a long drive where people don't get hurt, and we don't have to send the defense back out there again and try and end this thing.
Yeah, let's have one drive where we show we can score on these guys, and we'll take the little minor victories where we can and go from there. It was alarmingly shocking, just almost a laissez-faire attitude that it was like they were up 23 and not down 23.
Yeah, I haven't seen from this team that talks a lot about never giving up and resiliency, and I don't think that there necessarily was give up, but there were just philosophical, I don't know, their philosophy in certain spots just didn't make much sense. You could look at the end of the first half as well. I mean, I don't know if you guys were surprised by that when you had a timeout called and they don't go for it, then they get some yards and then they just let the clock run out. It was sort of, what are you? Are you trying to just go to halftime and recover, because we've seen that strategy before, or are you trying to call timeouts and move down the field? You can't do both. You got to do one or the other, go all the way or don't do it at all. And there just seemed confusion and mixed messages all around.
Yeah, I'd agree. Particularly at the end of the first half, I thought, you know, you had a chance. I think they left a timeout on the table. And so you can, you know what, run another play, get another timeout, take one last shot. You never know what's going to happen. You saw what happened in Baltimore, because you weren't getting the ball back to start the third quarter. You know, one thing that was funny was when they got that late touchdown to Marvin Jones, if they get the two-point conversion, all of a sudden this is a one-possession game. There were still 5 minutes left. There was time to get going. But I think Jay and I were talking about this earlier this morning, is that while they left themselves no room, no margin for error, just by how slowly they went about things earlier, there at the end of the first half, there in the third quarter into the start of the fourth quarter to get that touchdown, they just ate up so much clock. You know, if that drive's not 7 minutes, if it's 4 minutes, you've got a little bit more time to play with.
The most confusing thing, they called the timeout when Pittsburgh had the ball going in there before the half. You're thinking, okay, they're going to get it back with 74 seconds, two timeouts. They're going to try to go down and get something. Then they throw an incomplete pass, the clock stops. Then Andy scrambles, and they just let the clock run down for 40 seconds, and they didn't call a timeout. So then you're thinking, okay, they're just going to pack it up. Then they come out and throw it on the next play where, you know, if it's incomplete, you're stopping the clock for Pittsburgh anyhow. That throw ended up being a 9-yard gain. Then Geo ran it for 8 yards, and all of a sudden they're at the 40. And like Kevin said, they had one timeout left on the table. And if you don't waste those 40 seconds, you've got 3 or 4 plays to try to go from your own 40 to maybe their 25 or 30 and at least get a field goal try. There just never seemed to be any kind of plan. It almost seemed like they were making it up as they went.
Maybe they were. I don't know. I mean, sometimes you wonder. I guess the bigger question out of all of this is, I mean, does a game like this, on that kind of spot, on that kind of stage, with that kind of an opportunity, I mean, thanks to, you know, Tom Brady finally not being able to pull rabbits and hats out for the third week in a row when Miami gets the interception to pull the upset, you're sitting there with a chance to take the number 2 seed and then 2 games at home and to come out with that kind of an effort in the first quarter in particular, just looking unprepared and lacking any of the urgency we talked about. Does it change your view of the team,
Joe?
I think a little bit. You wonder just how this group will respond on a big stage, because they haven't done it. The Pittsburgh game earlier this year, they didn't play that well in prime time. Miami, they played poorly in prime time. This game, absolutely poorly. Probably their worst game period since 2 years ago up in Pittsburgh. And you just wonder if this team, when the moment will not be big enough for them. And right now, it looks as if it is.
Do you buy that?
Yeah, I think so. But I think all along, even at the start of the year, all knew that this team is only going to change perceptions of itself come January. Now, right now, it's got 2 weeks left to figure out a way to get into January. They've got the upper hand. They still control their own fate. They, you know, need a win, you know, against Minnesota, and I think that would really, you know, kind of solidify where they are. But it's no given. The Vikings are playing much better over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, to me, they won't change any perceptions until they get to January. We can make conjecture about, you know, will they be big enough for the stage? And, you know, we'll have to wait until they get to actually get to the stage again.
And the stage, it'll be much more helpful if that stage is at home, which is why it was so important to get that bye, to guarantee a home game and the bye. I think they're looking at next week. You got New England playing Baltimore, and that's a win either way. If Baltimore upsets New England, then they've still got that shot at the two seed. If New England beats Baltimore, then the division's right there for them to have. So like Whitworth was saying, they still have everything in front of them, but it is just a little surprising that they came out as flat as they did with the game meaning as much as it did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that as well. You're the segue king, Jay. You're perfectly playing in every place I want to go. I love it. So we're going to invite you on every week. Joe, you're kicked off. Sorry. So we were in the locker room after the game, obviously, and the locker room, we'll get to this in a second, but it was I guess not surprising, but different than what I expected when we got down there, considering the way the game had gone. Here's Michael Johnson and Andrew Whitworth after the loss Sunday night against Pittsburgh, really confident and almost defiant.
We were saying this week a little bit, you guys haven't really had a game where just, because in the NFL things happen, it's hard to win, things go wrong, people have bad games. You guys really hadn't had one of those. Even in your losses, you guys have been close. Is it one of the things you look at night to night and you say, hey, these games happen in the NFL and things don't go your way, and you just chalk it up?
Yeah, it's tough to win on in the NFL. It's tough to win on the road. Tonight, they just... It started faster than we did. We had a lot of stuff go their way, and it be like that sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we just gotta, whatever position we put in as a defense, we gotta rise and get stops. And we will look at the tape, we will learn from it, and we will get better. No spirits are down over here.
What do you think the mind frame of the team is?
We let one get away. What are we gonna do about it? Gonna cry?
No.
We're going to come back to work and get better. We're going to come back to work and get better.
Do you feel like you guys missed a chance at second seed there?
No. We lost the football game. Now we're going to come back and win 2 in a row at home and go into these playoffs and wreak havoc.
I thought we had a conversation with Brandon.
We're going to be all right. Nobody should have their head down. I mean, it wasn't the way we wanted to go. But there were some good things in the game, I'm sure. And it's never as good as you think it is, and it's never as bad as you think it is. So we're going to go back, look at it, learn. We'll be better.
You said you're going to win the last 2 and wreak havoc in the playoffs?
Hell yeah.
Particularly challenging because you guys have been running the ball so well. It takes a lot of that out of the equation. You have to throw it around. It kind of throws the whole game plan off.
Yeah, you're not going to get an opportunity to run the football once you're down by that. So.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where we talked a little bit about this week, actually, in the NFL. Teams have bad games or things just happen, but you guys hadn't really had really one like that. Is it one of those things you just look at a game like this and say, things just happen, and at some point you just got to kind of throw your hands up and say, just move forward, it happens like this sometimes.
We had some really bad breaks, and you just move forward and try and get on a streak and get back to playing the way you want and kind of treat those exactly what they were. It's kind of... something that for this season I would say is fluke to happen to this football team. And I mean, everyone knows that. I mean, it's bad breaks, So now we just need to get on another roll and get ourselves in the playoffs and we'll be good.
But not anything. You don't come away concerned or anything like that by them.
I'm never going to be concerned by that kind of stuff. I mean, we always know the potential of this team and we've shown it. I mean, we're not going to allow people to start talking like we're 5-9 again. We're 9-5, and we got an opportunity to do everything we set out to the season to do, and that's the truth of it. It's just one game. Great part about the NFL is as long as they keep giving you Sundays to go back out and bounce back, you have to take advantage of them. And so everything we want is still in front of us, and we want to go win this division. We want to get ourselves in the playoffs, and that's still in front of us. So. We still have an opportunity the next 2 weeks to bounce back and take control.
You mentioned not being concerned. What is it about this team that makes you feel like you should be concerned about that one tonight?
I'm not concerned.
you know, what you want to do is just make sure guys realize it's one game and it didn't go our way, and you're put in a situation where you're down a whole bunch of points early in really bad conditions as far as the wind and stuff. So, you know, winging the football over there is not going to be that easy to do. And, you know, it's the truth of it. I mean, punt return for a touchdown and the muff snap, you know, gave him 14 points basically. So, you know, really, you look at it, the game, you know, is a tie game there if we have an opportunity to do something differently there. So, you know, without those two kind of plays. So, really, they had two huge plays that helped them win the game and get up big and in rough weather. But it's one game. And like I said, we still have a chance to go win our division, and that's what we set out to do at the beginning of the season.
I don't know, Joe. Were you even surprised a little bit at the tone of sort of whatever? Hey, it's fine. We're gonna go, and like Michael Johnson said, we're gonna wreak havoc in the playoffs.
I don't think so. I think that these players know fan reaction almost as well as everyone, and it's almost as if they had their little smartphones out on the sideline during the game and were gauging the Twitter reaction, because big as that bandwagon filled up after New England and Miami, that bandwagon was there were people going to the exit aisles after that.
The reaction of fans is just it's so laughable at this point. I mean, it wasn't but 7-0, and it was Andy Dalton stinks, fire Marvin Lewis. I mean, it just, the bandwagon couldn't have been more full minutes before. It's just crazy how quickly people turn, and a game like this on the national stage will do that, because people view it as more important, and maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, is a game on a national stage more important than another game? I mean, is there a difference? I mean, is them going to what everybody knew was a big game against Indianapolis at home and beating them handily less important than this game on Sunday because it wasn't in prime time for everyone to see?
No, I don't think it's less important. Although, again, it goes back to that perception. I got more than a few tweets saying, you know, what Rodney Harrison was saying at halftime on the NBC telecast, that, you know, the Bengals aren't mentally tough enough to handle this. Well, that's Rodney Harrison's perception, because that's all Rodney Harrison's ever known about the Bengals. I can remember when Rodney Harrison was playing for the Patriots. Remember him doing a conference call with us one time, and he was making mention at how much he liked Chad personally, but what Chad did on the sideline, would do on the sidelines during games, was basically Mickey Mouse, and it was child's play, and how them with the Patriots, they were there focused, ready to go, and this was a business for them. And I think I hear that in Rodney Harrison's attitude towards the Bengals right now. You know, again, January is the time they will change any perceptions, if they're going to change them.
I think the game is more important for the fans because it's on a national stage, and a regular Sunday game against Indianapolis, you're going to have Colts fans watching and Bengals fans watching, and maybe that's it. But on the national stage, you've got everybody watching, so people know that if you're a Bengals fan, then they can come at you. They can make fun of you, if you want to say that, about the team you cheer for. I think Bengal fans have that complex. It's been so long since they have done anything in the playoffs, and they want the team to play well on these primetime games just to kind of maybe justify their fandom and staying behind this team. And I think that's where all that rapid reaction comes from, where they just get let down again, and it's like they throw in the towel right away.
Yeah, I mean, they're made to feel stupid. Bengals fans familiar with that. You know, when everyone's watching, to made to feel dumb, it makes them not believe everything that they've seen with their own eyes. But as far as what it actually means for this year's team's hopes, I don't know that it's that big of a deal. I mean, like Michael Johnson and Andrew Whitworth were saying, they're still 9-5. They're still in a position to be the 3 seed or the 2 seed or whatever they want. I mean, they still can go in, and they've been a confident group all year, no matter what's happened. You get some weird stuff that happens on special teams that gives 14 points, and that swings a difference in this game. Otherwise, you would have been looking at a win. And I think that's a right or wrong. It's how I look at it. So I don't know that in the actual impact of how it will affect this team come game in January, wherever, whenever that is, I don't know. I don't know if it changes, if I feel much different right now than I did when we were driving up here to Pittsburgh on Sunday morning.
They're 9-5 right now. They're in a position to either finish 11-5, or right now they're in a position to finish 9-7 and not make the playoffs. They're right in the middle right now. They haven't clinched a playoff spot yet. And we talk about fans and their complexes and stuff. These fans do remember 2006, when this team lost the last 3 games and the snowball started in a primetime game on the road.
You are claiming correlation. But, I mean, if there's one thing we know about this team, they have much different personalities inside of the locker room and much better character to avoid snowballs becoming avalanches than they did in 06. I mean, you're talking about a locker room of Chad and Odell, and I mean this is a different. Don't you think that the expectations and the idea of that happening are far different and far slimmer?
I would, but just points well taken. You know, that did happen in 06. You had everything right in front of them. All they had to do was win one of those last 3 games. Now, you know, the primetime game he was referring to happened to be at Indianapolis against Peyton Manning, and you had a rookie left tackle at that time, and Andrew Whitworth starting against Dwight Freeney. Yeah. Then they went to Denver, had the infamous, that game could have gone to overtime, but a botched PAT snap in the snow, and then the Steelers beat them in overtime on the following weekend to knock them out of the playoffs. I think this is a different team. I think this team has shown a lot of resiliency this year. But, you know, again, go do it. They're, you know, we can sit there and think all we want, but they have to go do it. They've got, you know, prime opportunities here with back-to-back home games to finish out the season.
Yeah, not just the character in the locker room, but I think it would be shocking if they collapsed like that and missed the playoffs this year, just because they are undefeated at home. Minnesota, despite what they did yesterday, is not that good of a team. It's a game they should win this week. And, you know, if Detroit knocks off Baltimore, then they clinch the division right there. That Baltimore game doesn't mean anything for the division at the end of the year. It could still mean something for home field advantage. With the way they've played at home and the character in the locker room, I don't think there's any reason to think there's any chance of a repeat of 06.
They've done so many things that are just different than what past editions of this franchise have been. I mean, whether it be the home record, whether it be the way they've responded to some of the losses, or just, you know, this team just has a different feel. They've just done different things. I think there's just more belief inside of that locker room that something's not going to go wrong. And that, you know, I'm sure the 06 team didn't feel like it was going to snowball either, but it's also a matter of, I just think the chances are less that it will happen.
But also, too, we think this team is different right now. Do we think this team is different if they go 1-done in the playoffs? Or do we go, to quote the great Dennis Green, we are who we thought they were?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a very real chance. I mean, but that, you know, that's no secret. that everybody knew that this year was going to be is going to be defined by those playoffs. Assuming there was a complete collapse of, you know, Houston proportions or anything like that, there was a pretty good chance he was going to make the playoffs and would be defined by how they fared there. My point being in all of this, one quarter in Pittsburgh is not going to define what this season was for this team. Now, if it turns into three straight games at the end, it will, but, you know, that's still for them to see. And to your point, Minnesota, I mean, the last 4 weeks have been pretty good. I mean, they tied Green Bay, went over the Bears, they get the win. Yes, I mean, it pushed Baltimore to all they wanted there in Baltimore. You know, a team that everyone's all raving about, of course. But everything changes pretty quick. So it's just when things start to happen, it's a matter of stopping the bleeding. And the other aspect of all that is injuries. I mean, it's James Harrison goes out with a concussion yesterday. Jermaine Gresham had a hip injury. And Kevin Huber, holy Lord, just annihilated by Terrence Garvin and ends up with a fractured jaw and a cracked vertebrae.
C4.
So his season is over, and even bigger pictures, even bigger picture issues for Kevin Huber there. What is the impact, and Joe, where do they go? Where do they go from here with the punter situation?
Zoltan Mesko, Chris Cluey, guy who used to play for Detroit's out there. There's the ancient Matt Turk, who's also out there.
Wasn't Matt Turk? Didn't he basically get fired after the Bengals game in Jacksonville last year? Yeah, I gotta say, Marvin Lewis was watching that game film. I can't imagine Matt Turk showing up in the house.
Neither do I, but there are some options there.
It's a scrap heap.
Yeah, but I mean, Huber meant a lot to this team. Holder was among the lead leaders in net punting average, at least until last night. It's a tough blow, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple games this year that you could argue that he deserved the game ball. I mean, I remember us specifically raving over and over again about the punt in the monsoon at New England, and really all year, Marvin Lewis just talking a few weeks ago how about this has been, you know, the best year that Kevin Huber has ever had, his ability to directionally pin people, and when you're coming up on a week with Cordarrelle Patterson and Travis Taylor, the Ravens returning team, Jacoby Jones, it's just bad timing. It's bad timing to be missing a guy like Huber.
Yeah, Joe almost made me choke on my Arnold Palmer half and half iced tea lemonade there when he brought up Matt Turk. So
you've since recovered.
Say it was ancient.
I did recover. Yes, but. Yeah, I think it's a huge, Huber may have been the best money they spent in the offseason.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, I mean, for what they got and they locked him down, he's simply gotten better every year. He's played into exactly what they've wanted him to. And I think it's a huge blow. So that will be interesting to see what goes on.
There's so much more that goes into it than just the big leg. He's unleashed some long, long kicks, tied the franchise record this year. But the directional punting, like you mentioned, has been so big. You saw that right off the bat in the Chicago game where he totally neutralized Devin Hester in the season opener. He's just got that knack of not just kicking the ball out of bounds, but almost making the ball hit right on that white stripe where he gets as much leg out of it as possible, but yet keeps it from being returnable. And the plus 50 punting that he's done as well to pin teams, and only has four touchbacks all year, only had two going into the last two games. It's just, he's been a valuable weapon, and you're not going to find a guy, you may find a guy out there that's got a big leg that can give you some good punts from time to time. It's going to be really hard to replace all that other situational punting that he does.
The Huber family not real thrilled with Terrence Garvin right now. I mean, no, and nor should they be. Well, I mean, there will be a fine coming there, right?
Oh, yeah. It'll be a significant fine. He should have lowered the target area. There's no doubt about that. The play being penalized. I mean, Collinsworth last night, he was parallel to the line of scrimmage and stuff, did not peel back. It's tough to see how you could have penalized on that. It wasn't the crown of the helmet rule and all that stuff.
He was leading with the helmet, though, wasn't he? I mean, and up under the chin. I mean, is there not a specific rule because it's not the peel back that's technically...
Not the peel back, and also... Was there the intent to target? Which you could say.
I mean, he had plenty of time to line that up.
Yeah.
I mean, he was that was even in real time. I mean, that was Huber quietly sort of sneaking across the field, and Garvin taking three or four steps where he was looking right at him, knowing that this was about to be a blindside truck, and launched up under the chin. I mean, that's to me. That it's the spirit of the rule, and that's probably why where the fine will come from.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, you've got the debate about punters and defenseless players and all of that too, as far as how they extend and everything.
Yeah, I mean, is there a difference between, you know, punters and, I mean, players shouldn't have to be able to choose between, okay, this is a punter, I better not. I mean, Garvin was quoted after the game as saying basically, yeah, I saw a guy in a white shirt and I hit him. I mean, is it fair to say that punters should be like quarterbacks essentially where they're under different rules, well, even if they're in the field of play?
Well, if we believe Rich Eisen, punters are people too.
They are people too. You hate to see it happen to Kevin Huber, just such a good guy and one that's meant so much to this team. So, you know, we're officially now on 71, aren't we?
No,
are we now? We're still on 70.
No, we're taking a little detour around because of where we all rendezvoused. We're going to go over to 675 and come down I-75 that way.
We've got to make sure the people have our navigational update.
Well, we are going by, talk about ancient Cooper Stadium there.
Oh.
Yes.
You've covered games in Cooper Stadium, haven't you?
Absolutely. I love the graveyard in the behind left field.
Really?
That's a serious poke. You hit one out there.
If you're making a stadium and you don't have a graveyard near it somewhere, you've missed an opportunity, I feel like. So we're still on 70. We're on our way. The scribe train is getting closer to returning to the station. So as we do, let's look big picture here one more time. I want each of us, since we're in this round table format, or since we're in the Sienna Studios and we're forced to sit in a square, actually, so it's more of a square table, square console. Each of us, let's go around the car here. Most concerning, most encouraging about the Bengals right now, with two games left in the regular season. I'll start with our driver since he controls our fate. What do you say as most concerning and most encouraging about this team right now?
I think most encouraging is the attitude we saw after the game last night. So many times after losses, you just hear him kind of mumble through the cliches, didn't execute, that type of thing. I think it was good to see that fight. I don't think it was lip service. I think they truly believe that it was just a brief stumble and that they're going to come back and finish the regular season and make noise in the playoffs. The most concerning, I don't know, you almost wonder about that run game. It was so good for a while, then it went a little south, and it came back when they moved Witt to to guard, and it was really picking up again, and then really nothing last night, and you can blame a lot of that on the hole they got in early, but it's a team that it's a totally different team when they run the ball. It just everything opens up for Andy when they can keep the defense a little more honest, and the fact that they didn't run the ball at all last night probably, I would say, is the biggest concern moving forward.
Yeah.
Gogo, what do you got?
I think most concerning for me, I think, are the injuries. How much are they really racking up? They've been so good at the next man up all year long. But are they, you know, when you're down Terrence Newman, and we saw, you know, Drake Kirkpatrick go off a little bit, you know, hobbled last night. I know he came back. You know, you mentioned James Harrison before. All these things start and really keep adding up. It's amazing what they've done, particularly defensively, despite all the injuries. But I wonder at some point how much does it really add up. Most promising, I think, is the resiliency that this team has shown all year long. I really believe they're going to take care of business here the last two games. They've played so well at home. Three straight home games with 40-plus points. You know, that shows an awful lot of confidence when they get there. So to me, I think they handle business the next 2 weeks.
I mean, I think what you guys are saying is right on. To me, that's where my most encouraging comes from, is what you just said. They've been so good at home this year, and that's going to be huge. When you look at these last two games at home, the confidence they have there, as well as they've played, and then assuming they make the tournament through that, win the North, you get a home game in the first round. And I've said this since the beginning of the year. I remember Joe and I doing predictions the very beginning of the year, and I said if they can win the first playoff game and get that monkey off their back, I think they have a chance to make that the type of run that fans want to see. But that just hovers so thick over this team right now. You've got to get that first one, and I think you can offset that a bit with them being at home. And I think the way they've played there is the most encouraging. The most concerning, it will always be 14 until he proves not to be. He played fine against Pittsburgh. He's played okay in the last couple of games. But what happened in November is still out there, and the fact is they're going to need him to make a lot of big throws, and the question in the big game, particularly when you talk playoffs, which is what we're talking right now, can he bring it, especially after what we saw in the two games against Houston in the playoffs. So to me, even though I think Andy Dalton has won over maybe a few people, contrary to the popular belief of the Twitterati, I still think that the number one concern has to be the quarterback's ability in a playoff game. Joe, what do you think?
Most encouraging, 9-5, still in control of things. Where, you know, depending on the Monday night game, could be even more in control of things. And let's face it, still wide open AFC, as Denver's loss to San Diego proved. Most concerning thing, defense the last couple games and how all of a sudden they've forgotten how to tackle. Which for a Mike Zimmer defense, that might be the most frustrating thing of all from Zim. They've got to become better disciplined in tackling, or else they're going to be in a world of hurt.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But it's the week-to-week league of the NFL just makes it so that, you know, you can think the season's over one week, and the next week it's world beaters, you know, and that's where you're at right now, and that's one of those things where if the Bengals can beat Minnesota in Baltimore, can beat New England next week, suddenly everyone's tone has changed. All of a sudden it's the Bengals did seize the moment and this, that, and the other, and, you know, it's yet to be seen. The bottom line is that they're still in. If you really back away from everything, and you keep the faith a little bit, should we keep the faith, Joe?
I think we gotta get everybody off the ledge, my friend.
Oh yeah, let's go back to that one. That's right. Let's back everybody off. Everyone I know has got a reason to say, put the
passed away. Wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. You could cut ties
for the life. We wanted to apologize for Third Eye Blind. We got good faith last week with our Billy Joel podcast, I feel like. I think we won a few people over. And I think people can appreciate the 90s fanatics are out there. We know they love it. And we're just bringing it full circle.
Yes.
We're just bringing it full circle. We bring stuff back, you know? It's like a jam band show, you know? You just never know. We're bringing stuff back. We're foreshadowing. We're doing stuff you don't even know right now.
You know what I should bring back for 1 week?
What do we need to bring back? I'm always scared when this happens.
Holy Megatron.
And bring back the Holy Megatron sound. Because the big game in Detroit tonight, they're going to need some Holy Megatron. I think it's all fitting.
Which, by the time this goes up, everybody will know what had happened in that game.
But we don't right now. So we'll just pretend.
Or not.
Yes. anytime we can get the Holy Megatron music in, we make sure to do that. It's one of our absolute favorite Gregorian chants. Of all the Gregorian chants, we like that one the most. Our drive is not over. I mean, we could technically just keep going for the duration. What do we got left here? We got left like an hour and...
I'm going to say about an hour.
We got about an hour left. I'm going to go ahead...
Definitely an hour, 93 miles.
Jay is going to throw the hammer down and get us there in an hour. But, you know, I mean, I could probably take a vote right now of all those listening to this podcast. I'm pretty sure they all just said, no, do not go another hour. I think we've heard enough. So we got to make sure we send the reminder out to everybody this Tuesday, 7 o'clock, Moreline Lager House. Giovanni Bernard will be our guest. Should be fun to have Gio in the house. After last week, we had Dre Kirkpatrick, and I allowed him and Joe Reedy an opportunity to get back at me over the Clark Harris incident. And Dre just picked a snowball up and hit me in the back. I mean, just completely unfriendly fire as far as I'm concerned.
But you did like the knuckleball, how it was aiming toward your head and then just did that dip down.
I have...
Broke sharp.
You could not have had any less concern about entertainment in that value. All you cared about was packing the most ridiculous snowball and hitting me right in the nose. You were so serious. As we were doing it, I went back and looked at the video again, and I said, look how serious Joe is. He is trying to take me out.
Remember, Joe's from Youngstown.
Yeah.
He knows how to pack a snowball. He knows how to use it.
He does. And
we've packed different things in snow in Youngstown.
Yes, bodies mainly. I'm proud that it didn't hit me in the face, but you know, I feel like I've wiped the slate clean now. The Clark Harris fired Adam incident, I think is I'm cool. We're clean on that, right? We're on the record. I'm good. Well, you know,
pause.
You're not going to give me that? All right. Well, I'm not organizing any more actual activities.
We'll see.
Yes. That was an audible shrug. That was a Zimmer audible shrug is what that was. So the slate is clean as far as I'm concerned, even if you're not going to give it to me. But Gio will be here this week. Who knows what will happen, but we've been having a lot of fun with these guys, so I'm sure he'll be a great guest. I would recommend getting there early. He'll definitely pack the house because he's obviously a huge fan favorite. So do that. And as well, make sure you follow our guys. Follow Jay at Jay Morrison CMG on Twitter, and then make sure you follow GoGo, which you're already doing because you did it when he first came on our podcast at FS Ohio, the dreaded underscore K Goheen, G-O-H-E-N. Make sure you follow him on Fox Sports. Read all their wonderful work. We're all there every day just doing nothing but doing gags and bringing you the guys the information that you want to hear. So I want to thank them for bringing the podcast, but mainly Jay for giving me segues and driving fast so that we can get home quickly, which we got to go out on something as we always do, and we sort of have the road trip theme here. So I guess...
Freaking
Are we going to go breaking the law? Yeah, you're a metal guy, right, Jay?
I mean,
hey, so, what nobody saw there in the Triangle of Pittsburgh, nobody knows.
This is true. We may or may not have broken three different laws of the road, for sure. And really, the fact that it was so easy to end up in such a precarious position headed down the wrong way on a one-way in a triangle, I think it's on the people of Pittsburgh. That's not on us, as far as I'm concerned. We did the best we could. So yeah, you're right. Breaking the law is the way to go out. So let's go out, because Jay would appreciate it that way, because he's a metal guy, and he's pretty much running the show, and we're counting on him to get us home healthy. A little Breaking the Law to take us out, and we will talk to you on the next edition of Scribe Session from whatever car we end up in at that point. So have a good one, and we'll talk to you next week.
Breaking the law, breaking the law.